Wendy, and you're listening to And Justice for All, where we bring you weekly political discourse from our couch to yours. I'm here with my husband, political dissident, teacher, and eternal rebel without a cause, Erson DeRosh. Erson, say hi.
Hey, I'm so glad to be doing this with you, dear. All of our political conversations are now going out to the World Wide Web, so this is should be fun.
We are literally coming to you today from our couch. Today's topic of discussion is the frustration with framing American political discourse as left-right binary only. We've been talking a lot lately about the multitude of different schools of political thought that get left out of the mainstream discussion because they don't fit neatly into the linear model of Republican versus Democrat. Erson, can you speak a bit about your personal political evolution and discovery of political ideology that for many Americans is considered outside the norm?
You seem so prepared for this. Wow, that was an amazing introduction. Very, very well thought out, honey. I think when I was younger, I definitely identified as Democrat, mainly because I think I was, the angry young man, and I think that the Democrats appealed to me. There was definitely a time, though, that I identified as Republican. It was towards the end of the Bush second W. Bush term and beginning of Obama, mainly because for a couple of reasons. One, just my complete disdain for radical Islam, that I didn't feel the Democrats were really handling or wanting to even really discuss. And also my not being very pro-abortion. I'm pro-choice, but I'm not pro-abortion. And I know that probably doesn't make sense to a lot of people, but I think those two things, I had a problem reconciling a lot of that with the Democratic Party. So I started to investigate the Republican Party, and I quickly found out that they didn't really have any answers of their own, and it was a complete and utter tyrannical mess. So I didn't really know where to go, and so I started looking for other things, and I think that's kind of what we've been talking about for the past few weeks, and that's going to be what we talk about here. But yeah, I mean, I always knew that there were other schools of thought besides Democrat and Republican, but I didn't think it was valid, maybe, especially when I was younger. I didn't think that any of those things were valid things. I thought it was, yeah, that's a cool idea, I agree with that guy, but it's Democrat or Republican or nothing. And then when I met you, you were very, very deep into the Democratic Party, and I was already not a part of that any longer. And so I introduced you to this kind of non-binary thing called the political compass. Now, just as far as transparency goes, I'm not all in on the political compass. I don't know how accurate it is. There are other political compasses. There are multispectral other multi-spectral diagrams of political ideology. But I think for our purposes today, just to kind of narrow the field down, we're going to use the political compass. And I introduced that to you, and you became pretty interested in this. And so, yeah. So now we're at this point where everything is just very, very, even more so than when we met. Everything is very right, left, Republican, Democrat in the United States. And you get your list of what you need to believe in, and you go to your corner. You're in the red corner. You're in the blue corner. This is your crap that you have to spew. And if you deviate from that in any way, you're an outcast. You're a pariah. You're a rhino. You're a dino. You're not one of us. And it's very polarizing.
I think we should also say that for those of you who are not familiar with the political compass, that the difference between the political compass and the linear model that we're thinking of as just everything either falls in left, right, is that a political compass is an axis where the left, right line is socialist being far left and capitalist being far right as an axis, with the other line, the line that runs up and down, the top being authoritarian and the far bottom being libertarian, which separates everything into four quadrants. So if you're listening to this, just look, Google political compass, you can see what we're talking about. But with this model, it sort of allows for a lot more deviation from just, well, that's left or that's right. And so all these political classifications are now available to you. And you spoke to a recent shift away. I wanted to get your thoughts about how much of this you think is now coming into the conversation because of the recent election. This was an election where a lot of people were disappointed with the candidates that both parties put up. And we heard a lot of talk about other political parties, libertarians, the Green Party, other candidates. Do you think that's sort of opened this up in a way where, like you said, when we met, nobody was really talking about it because who cares? It's not valid. Has it now become valid?
Yeah, when we met, I remember we met during, it was Obama was running against Romney. That's when we met. And I remember us watching the 2012. Yeah. And I remember us watching the debates and stuff together.
Right.
That's how I remember how we met. Yeah. We watched the Obama Romney debates together. So I think when we met too, like that was a lot of our, we liked to talk about politics. I liked to talk about politics. You liked to talk about it. I think that was we had common ground there. And you were already talking about Hillary Clinton as a prospective candidate. I mean, that was already being discussed within, Democrat circles. And I think it's I remember at the time, and this is going back, and I have to just explain this to the listeners real quick, but when we met, we lived in a house, with another girl, with a friend of yours that you'd went to college with.
Mm-hmm.
She was very, very, very involved in, social work and the Democrat Party on a local level, which is, it's great. People probably need to get more involved in their local politics. But anyway, I remember her and I, and I've brought this up to you before, her and I butted heads quite a bit because everything had to fall in line with as far as she was concerned, you know, in conversation with her, everything had to fall into this proper Democrat blue donkey. Do they call it the donkey or the ass? I don't know what they call it. I don't know what they call it, but everything, you know, had to fall in line with that as far as she was concerned, you know. I mean, she didn't say that outwardly, you know. You could tell that that's what she was thinking, though, because anytime I said anything to the contrary that stepped outside of the Democrat Party, she would kind of freak out and start screaming or whatever. And I don't think anyone has ever really, anyone that knows me very well knows that my politics are pretty left-leaning and have been for most of my life. But she couldn't wrap her head around anything that was left. It was more to her just the Democrat Party and their platform and you know. It was, so yeah, so to get to your point about are other ideologies getting more play nowadays because of Hillary and Trump, you know, I think they're starting to. I think people like, the reason why I bring our ex-roommate up is because I think people like her are holding it back. I think she is an example of someone that has a lot of leftist principles, but she's clinging hard to Democrat, DNC, you know? She probably has more in common with another ideology on the political spectrum, you know, but she's probably hasn't thought that much about it and she doesn't want to identify. That's another problem too, is when you step outside of Democrat or Republican into another sphere of thought, well, then you're fucked because, you know, CNN, you know, like if you have a major platform, CNN's not going to want to talk to you. Fox News isn't going to want to talk to you. MSNBC isn't going to want to talk to you. You know, like Rachel Maddow is not going to have you on her show unless she thinks or her producers think that you're going to toe a fucking particular line, you know, which is the DNC, you know, the Democrat Party. Same with, say, you know, even going to, say, the Young Turks, you know, Cenk, he's not going to have anybody on there that completely and utterly disagrees with him, you know? That's not what they're trying to put forth. So while I do see a rise in acceptance of other schools of thought, I also think that I kind of feel like the old guard is hanging on and they're keeping people hung on to the hook.
I'm just going to piggyback off of that and say that I definitely found that to be the case, especially with the last election. And I'll give the example of Bernie supporters. I supported Bernie in the primaries. I was pro-Bernie. And so I was in a lot of chat rooms and discussions and speaking to friends who a lot of whom are left-leaning about Bernie and the support of Bernie, because it became this thing where when we were talking about the primaries, well, if you're a Bernie supporter, then you're, you know, to some people's opinion, you're a traitor to the feminist cause. We've been trying to get a woman as, you know, a major party political candidate forever. It's never happened. This woman is getting closer than anyone's ever gotten. So if you're a third wave feminist, the younger feminists overwhelmingly were going pro Bernie because they were saying, hey, his platform is more in line with what I think the direction the country should be going. We should be getting more progressive. We don't like neoliberal policies. We don't like the hawkishness of, you know, the Democratic Party in the last 30 years. We don't want this like pro-capitalist deregulation bullshit anymore. Like, we want a true liberal progressive candidate. So we're pro Bernie. And then you had the second wave feminists, the older women, saying that we were all traitors to, you know, Hillary. And it's like, well, wait a minute here. A lot of us have the same goals. A lot of us have believed a lot of the same things about policy and social issues and things like that. But then we're having all this infighting because it was like, no. Like you're saying, like, toe the DNC line, like that, you know, this isn't it. And then once Hillary got the nomination, that fighting continued because all those people were trying to shame millennials and pro-Bernie supporters into now shut the fuck up and toe the line. Like, you know, it didn't work out for you and we don't want to hear you talking about how the platform should be more progressive, the DNC should stop pandering to the middle and all this bullshit and pander to the people who really are left, who really want progressive agenda. And it was like, no, shut up. We don't care about you. Your candidate lost. We're not going to care about a progressive platform. We're just going to try to pander to the middle. And you're traitors if you don't just go along with that.
And also, going off what you're talking about here, in 2012, when we met the Romney Obama election, I thought the most progressive candidate fielded was Jill Stein. I voted for Jill Stein.
I did too.
We both did. So, you know, if we're talking about women in politics running for high office, the highest office in the land, you know, in 2012, we were already doing that. I guess the reason why I bring that up is because with the Trump Hillary election, it was kind of like, I felt various things from people, like on social media. It's not that they didn't want to vote for a woman. I don't think many of them had even ever considered ever voting for a woman for president of the United States, you know, unless you were very progressive, you know. Does that make sense?
I think also, too, I don't want to just speak to the left. I guess we're speaking from personal experience. But I would guess from the things I've read and interviews we've watched and stuff that people who may be more right-leaning, if that's what you want to call it, or have certain, economically conservative principles, but, like, maybe lean more, you know, liberal or individualistic when it comes to, like, social issues, I think they had the same problem in this election. You know, it's like, the RNC just wanted everybody to go along with their candidate, and whoever that candidate may be, all you other people who have, if you like Ron Paul or if you liked Ted Cruz or whatever, once all those people fall off and we decide that it's Donald Trump, it doesn't matter if you're like, okay, the guy's kind of like a megalomaniac nut job with like his finger on the trigger, that's not really something I can get along with. It was like, no, fall in line. Like, we don't care. You know, we need you here. And the question I would ask you is, did they convince people better of it than the other side? Because we know what the outcome was.
Yeah, they did. They absolutely did. I mean, that's why Trump won. They did. I think they convinced different people of a lot of things. But I think what you're trying to say is, just to kind of unpack some of that, you're trying to say that the right, one of the reasons is they convinced people possibly through their words, the way they worded things. I mean, Trump was already out there saying that Mexicans were rapists, saying that he wanted Muslims to carry around religious identification cards. I mean, it's not a far stretch to say that he was basically telling people that you don't want a woman as the president of the United States.
You certainly don't want this woman.
Yeah, and you certainly don't. You certainly don't want this woman. But yeah, so Hillary, people were, that's a great point that you bring up. Women wanted to vote for Bernie. The DNC's saying, no, get in line behind Hillary. And that's a fantastic point. Same thing with the RNC. You know, they were saying align behind Trump. It just goes to show you the power of corporations and these parties. But, you know, what I was saying is for women, if you want or wanted a progressive agenda and you wanted that progressive agenda delivered to you by a woman, you know, Jill Stein's been running for president for, you know, quite a while now, you know, so she was out there and we voted for her in 2012. I also voted for her again in 2016. So that was there, but I think bringing it back around to the point, Jill was never even in the conversation. That's kind of the point of the topic of today's podcast. Jill was never, ever in the conversation at all whatsoever.
I think you're right, and I was going to make that point too. I think a lot of the rhetoric that followed, even though people on both sides, on all sides, were saying, like, these are not ideal candidates, what are we to do? I think you could argue that the outcome of the election was that a lot of people who were left-leaning decided to either vote for a third-party candidate or stay the fuck home because they couldn't push the button for somebody that they had so many problems with, and people on the right did the opposite. They said, hey, lesser of two evils, so... Because they said evangelicals went out and voted for him. They didn't care about grab the pussy. They didn't care that, you know, he's obviously not some Bible-beating Christian and that he doesn't care about Christian values. He was holding up the LGBTQ flag saying, oh, I'm going to support this community, even though we know that's a lie now. But, you know, did that stop the evangelicals from going out and vote for him? No, you know. And the same could be said for other, you know, other segments of the population. So let's shift a little here. We've talked a lot about the election and stuff like that, but in terms of the going back to the axis, there's a lot of, especially with the events in Charlottesville and the Antifa and the KKK and the Confederate monuments this week, there's a lot of talk online on Facebook. I've been in, you know, Republican-leaning pages like Breitbart, left-leaning pages like NPR and the New York Times, and let's see what's happening in these comments section. There's been so much talk about authoritarianism. Each side accusing the other side of being fascist, of being Hitler, of being Nazis. We had people out in droves with actual Nazi flags, and there's a lot of talk about, no, you're the fascist. No, you're the fascist. You know, no. And so my question is, if you talk about authoritarianism on this axis, as we've seen, then you can see that indeed both left-leaning and right-leaning people can move towards authoritarian tactics, especially when it comes to like social issues. And do you think that they're being hyperbolic when they accuse other sides of being authoritarian or fascist? Or do you think that there's certain practices, certain tactics being used that you could argue are authoritarian in nature by both sides?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the Democrats and the Republicans, the right and the left, yeah, they both use different tactics to get people behind them, play to their crowd, or whatever. I think in the case of Charlottesville, where we're running into problems is the right wing wants to prop the racists up. They want to prop up the Nazis or not have to make excuses for them, maybe a better description. The right wing doesn't want to have to make an excuse for the Klan in your street. The left wing wants to, like groups like Antifa, they want to completely, you know, go to war with the Nazis and use their different things. And the problem is that when you speak out about freedom of speech in this country, people don't really understand freedom of speech. And I was just to repeat something that we've already talked about, I think that a lot of the news outlets are doing people an extreme disservice by going on these impassioned rants about Nazism and the Klan when they should be explaining the Constitution and the Supreme Court. And as we've talked before, it is not illegal in the United States of America. Other countries, it is. And that's been a big talk on social media, the laws of other countries. But we're not talking, everybody wants to tell you what Germany's laws are about, you know, regarding this kind of stuff, or what Scotland's laws are, or what England's laws are, but they don't want to talk about what the laws are in the United States of America. And the First Amendment to the Constitution that talks about freedom of speech, that's just ink on paper. That doesn't mean anything, really. It has to be upheld by the courts. And anybody listening to us right now, they can get on the internet and they can look up the Supreme Court cases that dealt with freedom of speech. And the Supreme Court was not always very kind to free speech in the early 20th century, but as time moved on in the civil rights movement, they became more into supporting free speech. So, to be short, the Ku Klux Klan can get in the street. The neo-Nazis can get in the street. They can wave these flags. They can say these things. Now, where the line gets drawn is an immediate incitement of violence. So they cannot immediately call for immediate violence. But they can literally get out in the street and say stuff like, "One day we will take back this land. One day we will take back this city." They can say that kind of stuff. The Supreme Court, and don't take my word for it, get on the internet, read about it. The Supreme Court has actually had cases about this. They have actually heard cases. Should the Ku Klux Klan be able to get into the streets? Should neo-Nazis be able to get into the streets? Should they be able to say this kind of hate speech? And they have upheld their right to do this. So, to quote Noam Chomsky, and I can't quote him directly because I don't remember the exact direct quote. So,
paraphrase.
Sorry, Professor Chomsky. But defending freedom of speech is defending speech that you don't like. I'm not going to sit around and only defend speech that I like. I also have to defend speech that I don't like if I'm going to defend freedom of speech. So groups like Antifa, they're really not, you know, the mainstream media, CNN and Don Lemon and stuff, is getting out there and they're trying to make excuses for Antifa or whatever, you know. And the truth is that Antifa is really suppressing free speech. As hateful as we want to make it, and it's terrible, it's terrible. And my heart goes out to the people of Virginia and the girl that was killed. And my empathy is with the minorities, the African American community, and the people that are outraged and offended by this. That's where my sympathies lie. But again, I have to reiterate that these people, however hateful their speech is, it is allowed in the United States of America and has been upheld by the Supreme Court, to the point where the Supreme Court doesn't even really hear cases like this anymore because they've already ruled on it so definitively. So the reason why I bring this up is because if you're on the left and you say this, God help you. You can't say that. It's God knows what you're talking about. The left will totally denounce you. I mean, do you agree?
I agree. I mean, you can't say it. I mean, the minute you say, well, if we truly believe in free speech, then we have to, that definition has to apply to everybody, then someone's calling you a Nazi sympathizer. So it's a slippery slope because, like you, I think it's vile. I think it's disgusting. I think the line between their rhetoric and when it becomes violent is very thin. So it's hard. But let's say, you know, I'm a feminist. In some circles, that's a very unpopular opinion to have. And women have had a long history of being threatened with rape and death for expressing feminist opinions. And I don't like the idea that, you know, well, if feminists want to hold a rally or a speech on a college campus, or she wants to say something, that, you know, violent people who disagree with those feminists are gonna like show up in force to shut down their free speech. And if that's how I feel, and I wouldn't want it to happen to me, like I don't know if I can get behind it happening to other people. But at the same time, I'm completely outraged and disgusted and horrified that there's like an uprising of the alt-right and that these people are in the streets with Nazi flags and their rhetoric is so repugnant and disgusting. And I don't like seeing it. I don't want to see it, but I'm conflicted. And you're right. I think the reason why I wanted to even talk about this today is because, like, you know, we're afraid that we live in a culture where you can't say that. You have to say it's okay to shut them down. It's okay to shut down Milo. It's okay to turn off their Twitter accounts because they don't agree with us. But I'm being intellectually dishonest if I don't say I find that scary, because what happens when it's the reverse?
Yeah, whatever we hold the left to, we have to hold the right to, and vice versa.
Right.
The right and the left need to be held to the same standards. So I can't say, you know, if I'm being honest with myself, I can't say free speech, yeah, I'm for it, and then not defend Milo. I don't like the shit that Milo says, but should Milo be allowed to speak if, you know, he gets booked to speak somewhere? Well, yeah, sure. I mean, you know, again, this, we're spending too much time telling people, well, this is how they do it in Italy. Well, how about how we do it in the United States of America? In the United States of America, as long as Milo's not inciting violence with his language, then, you know, he can talk. Professor Dawkins, was you know, deplatformed is now the term that they're using. He was deplatformed, not allowed to speak at a radio station in Berkeley. It's completely ridiculous. Richard Dawkins is one of the, not only one of the greatest living scientists, but is one of the most important thinkers of the past 50 years. And so you're not going to have him on your show because they didn't like what he had to say about Islam. You know, that's a problem too. And like we were, for instance, last night we were watching an interview with Ben Shapiro. And it was about an hour and a half. And half the time we were looking at each other saying, yeah, wow, that makes sense. And the other half of the time we were looking at each other going, this kid's fucking nuts. So, you know, where's Ben Shapiro fall? You know what I'm saying? And that's, and he's an intelligent kid. I don't think he's stupid by any stretch of the imagination. He's got his Daily Wire news thing, you know. But why don't you see Ben Shapiro more? That's kind of what we're getting to. That's kind of the real point of this show today. Why don't you see Ben Shapiro more on mainstream television? Why don't you see Noam Chomsky ever on mainstream television? I mean, I don't know. I think maybe he was on MSNBC like 2 years ago or something. You know, why don't you see Sam Harris on mainstream television? You know, why was Christopher Hitchens always just on PBS on the Charlie Rose show? Well, he wasn't. He was, then they had him on a lot because he wrote for Vanity Fair. So I guess that was kind of like his card into the discourse. But yeah, but you have a lot of people that don't fit on the Democrat Republican line, and so you don't hear from them.
Right, and to your point, there seems to be, you mentioned Ben Shapiro, and we've been trying to check out a lot of people's channels similar to his, or their outlets that are similar, and there seems to be a lot of alternative news outlets, YouTube channels, blogs popping up lately in response to this whole in the mainstream conversation that we were talking about. Do you think this is where political discourse is going now that people on all sides are sort of becoming disillusioned with the limitations of mainstream media? I mean, you know, on the right, you have people screaming about fake news, and Donald Trump calls reporters fake news. And almost all the rhetoric you hear somewhere on Breitbart is don't trust it. Don't trust fake, you know, the fake news. Don't even trust Fox. They're not in Trump's corner. They're not stumping for Trump. Like, you know, Trump is the source of our information. And then on the left, you have people who are more progressive, who, you know, supported Bernie, who wants the Democratic Party to move left. And they're like CNN, MSNBC. I mean, even though the Breitbart readers want to make it out like they're like socialist news, or like they like to call it communist news network and all that, people who are true progressives are like, that bullshit ain't fucking, you know, far left news. I mean, it's like Republican light news, you know? So there's people on both sides that are sort of craving something else. So are these people the new answer to that?
Well, yeah, that's what, there was one line in the Ben Shapiro interview from last night that we watched where he said that he felt the Democrats were moving more left and the Republicans in turn had to move more left. And I was like,
are you high?
I was like, Ben, bro, who is your weed guy, man? Because I might need his number.
Right.
That's just a ridiculous statement. If anything, the left has moved more right to where they're basically now moderate Republicans, And the Republicans are so far off the spectrum that they're not, you can't even, it's really hard to consider them a legitimate political party.
Well, yeah, and then when we were talking about the political compass, if you look up the political compass, they'll chart popular politicians, political figures through time, blah, blah, blah. And I challenge you now to go look up the political compass and see where all American politicians of late fall, especially if you look up the one for the 2016 election, they'll chart Bernie, Jill, and Rubio, Cruz, Trump, all of them, as well as Hillary and Obama. And guess what? Like, you're going to be surprised what you find, because they all fall in the same upper right quadrant, which, as a generality, if you want to put a label on it, is conservative.
100%. You can go back to, I mean, this goes back decades. I did a, part of the reason why we're doing this is because I've done some solo political videos and you didn't like them. I'm sorry. And you said it was better when I had somebody to converse with. And you and I converse all the time about politics, so it's like, why not record some of our conversation and make a podcast out of it? So that's what we're doing here. And so what? I totally lost what we were talking about. What were we talking about?
Are these alternative news sources?
Alternative news. Alternative
news sources. Are they going to replace this current model where we don't really talk about much except for neoliberal, neocon politics? That's all that's being discussed.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think you're definitely seeing a rise in internet, I guess. I'm sorry, for lack of a better term, internet channels, internet news. You're definitely seeing a rise in that. Maybe even maybe it's even overtaking mainstream news sources, you know, like the New York Times. When I say mainstream news, you know what I mean, the New York Times or CBS or NBC or whatever. I think a lot of people, most of the people that we know, I don't think that they get a lot of their news from mainstream news sources.
I think certainly, too, we'd have to say that millennials are moving away from mainstream news sources. I mean, I mentioned that I thought there was a disconnect between older women who are feminist or left-leaning and the younger generation, the millennial generation, the third wave feminists, and their feelings about this election and these candidates. And I think the same thing applies to what we're talking about here. I would imagine that our parents and our grandparents are still watching some form of mainstream media, whether it be, you know, oh, my dad's watching Fox News and my mom watches CNN. Neither of them are getting or watching the kind of stuff we're watching where we're like, oh, I want to go seek out something else.
Right. That's what I was trying to say. I'm sorry. I lost my train of thought when I was talking about the solo political videos that I'd done. President Eisenhower said, however long it's 75 years ago now or somewhere thereabout, he said, if you do not believe in New Deal policy, then you should not be involved in the political conversation at all. Bernie Sanders, who's basically just a New Deal Democrat, in 2016, as it were. We're in 2017 now, but Bernie Sanders' 2016 campaign, he talks about New Deal policies, and you get on social media and they think that he's fucking Lenin.
Right.
Or Stalin or something.
Right.
And it's like, man, what are you guys, where are you getting your information about? There is
Well, we know where they're getting their information from Fox News, who tells them, like, you know, Obama is a socialist of the highest order.
I mean, this may be a conversation for another podcast, but there is a serious problem in the United States of America when it comes to the understanding of what these ideologies are. Mm-hmm. Socialism, communism, we hear...
Anarchism.
Yeah, anarchism, capitalism. We hear that... We watch a Rubin Report with Dave Rubin. That's actually where we were watching the Ben Shapiro interview on. And Dave Rubin's calling himself a classical liberal.
Right.
Then at some point in the interview, he starts putting words in Shapiro's mouth that Shapiro is a classical liberal, and Shapiro kind of goes, yeah.
But he says he's a conservative libertarian. But, that's the label he puts on himself.
Then at some point he says he's a conservative libertarian. Then at some point he says he's right wing. He says he's right wing like two or three times. Or then at some point he says he's an old school conservative. You know, so just from the... And I don't know that much about Dave Rubin at all. And I don't know that much about Ben Shapiro at all. But from my very limited listening to, you know, what they have to say, I don't see any kind of classical liberalism there. I don't know what they think. Ben Shapiro definitely is not a classical liberal. But by any stretch of any kind of stretch of the imagination, Dave Rubin could be. I don't really know exactly his. I don't know enough about him to really make a judgment call on that. But for some reason, there's a lot of people that think that the libertarians, or as you like to call them, the libertarian bros. The 4chan bros, the libertarian 4chan bros, the Sargon of Aked bros.
The anti-bros, anti-SJW, anti-feminism.
Yeah, yeah. They like to think that libertarianism, American libertarianism, or the American style of libertarianism that's invaded the world... Ayn Rand, they like to think that is the successor to classical liberalism, and that is just extremely ridiculous. Classical liberals would never have written or been for the kind of corporate tyranny, right-wing destruction of civil liberties in the working class, the way that American, this strain, this virus, this cancer of American libertarian thought is. The actual successors to classical liberalism would be anarchists and the various strains of anarchism. So, if you're listening to this and you can hear the sound of my voice, classical liberalism and American libertarianism have categorically, absolutely nothing to do with one another. But
But at least these guys are opening up the conversation. I think that's our point. We may not agree with some of what they've had to say, but they are taking the conversation somewhere else at least.
Exactly, exactly. For instance, like I brought up, we've brought up Shapiro, and we've brought up Dave Rubin. We've brought up the Young Turks, which, you know, neither one of us particularly care for.
But I guess they're moving the conversation to that point, a little bit left of mainstream media, like they would be the answer to, okay, slightly more progressive, less neoliberal, you know, even though, like you said, it's not perfect.
No, it's terrible.
But other people, other people are opening up the conversation. Younger people are going and saying, like, we have an alternative to this.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I just brought up Sargon of Akkad. I think there is a lot of, I mean, you just go to his YouTube channel and look at his subscribers and his view count on his videos. I think there's
a lot of interest.
There's a lot of interest in what he has to say. And I think a lot of people are kind of getting their news possibly from that. But
Maybe not their news from somebody like him, but certainly their political discourse.
See, and that's kind of a problem, and I don't know when you want to wrap this up, but I guess we kind of need to. But just to end on, I'd like your thoughts. I mean, I used to always really blame, and I still do, I blame Democrats a lot for getting their news from fucking Samantha Bee or John Oliver or John Stewart back in the day. And this Trevor Noah guy, you know, like that's where they get their news from, is like comedians. And are libertarian bros now getting their news from Sargon of Akkad?
You make an excellent point. That's a really good point. You know, if we put it in context, like, sure, I like watching John Oliver and I like Samantha Bee. But like you said, it's not news. It's commentary on news. It's comedy about news. And to the same point, you know, just because we're sitting down and we're having a conversation, or just because we splice some footage together and then we commentate on it, that's not news, that's opinion. So sure, we're opening up a large door for opinion, political discourse, if you really want to get out there and find it. Like you said, there's stuff on all sides, there's voices from all kinds of camps. But I think we need to frame it in terms of it's political conversation, it's political discourse, it's opinion, it's not news. And then that opens a question, like you said, and maybe we need to end here, but where do you get your news from? Where do you just go to get news without opinion and snarky rhetoric and ha-ha jokes and skits and songs and all that? We enjoy all that. We both do. But we seemed, and we turned off our cable, so we don't have any news anymore. We don't watch mainstream media. We really don't. So I guess the question then becomes, we filled in the gaps maybe with political discourse and comedy, but have we filled in the gaps of news? Where do you go if you're actually a citizen who wants to get news, but you don't necessarily want to get it with a slant?
I think that I had a lot of fun doing this, and I look forward to the next time we get to do this. But I guess I would just like to end by saying I think that's a fantastic question. Where do you get your news from? And I, you know, my answer...
Weigh in, friends.
Yeah, absolutely. Comment... send us an email, find us on Twitter and Facebook. Wendy's about to give you guys that information, and let us know where to get your news from. I think, first of all, critical thinking plays a big part in it. And I also think, does the place where you get your news, do they, for instance, let's say you get your news from Fox News. Let's say you watch Fox News 24/7. That's all you do. The TV's on Fox News. Is Fox News ever offering, you know, besides like Juan Williams or whoever the generic Democrat Party person they have on there, besides their just ridiculous, you know, asinine comments, is Fox News really running any sort of serious counter argument, serious counter, you know, Sean Hannity. They let Sean Hannity just rail for an hour. Do they ever offer any serious counter argument to Sean Hannity? Do they ever offer any serious counter argument to Tucker Carlson and what Tucker Carlson's saying? Same thing with CNN. If you're just like listening to Don Lemon all day long, or these CNN commentators, are they offering a serious counter to that? And I think that's a good barometer for, are you receiving valid information? That, and just, I mean, you have to be able to just kind of critically think and not like just react with your emotions constantly. You have to be able to step back and kind of objectively say the, and CNN and Fox News and stuff, they're hoping that you don't do that. They're hoping that you get very emotionally involved to the point where you freak out and get on Facebook and rant about, you know, whatever they want you to rant about. But I think, you know, some objectivity on the viewer or reader's part is necessary, and some critical thought. You know, if you're reading a piece, like if you're reading a piece about how Donald Trump just went fishing with Vladimir Putin, I mean, you know that's not right. But there's going to be some lady, little old lady somewhere, who reads that and thinks it's true, and she's going to like repost it and share it on Facebook. And she's going to think that it's the God's honest truth, you know? So, yeah, I think just some common sense thinking helps a lot.
Okay, I think we're going to go ahead and end there. We've had some good stuff. We'd love to hear from you guys. We really, really want to engage with people who agree with us, or as one of my professors in college said, you want to call me an ignorant slut. I mean, whatever, you know?
If you disagree, you actually get moved to the front of the line, so.
So hit us back up. You can find Ersin on Facebook and YouTube as Ersin Deroche, U-R-S-I-N-D-E-R-O-C-H-E. On Twitter at UD3, the number 3, bare knuckle. And his email address is uderoche@gmail.com. uderoche@gmail.com. You can find me, Wendy, on Facebook as Wendy Deroche. On Twitter at Lavender Wolf. That's Wolf with two O's, like Virginia Wolf. And on Instagram as Honeybee Priestess. My email is just wendyderoche@gmail.com. Hit us up. Disagree with us. We want to talk. We want to engage. This has been And Justice for All, political discourse from our couch to yours.